Welcome to Running on Ice, the coolest community in freight. I'm your host, Mary O'Connell, bringing you the latest tech updates, warehouse news, and everything happening in the cold chain world. Not only is there the coolest show in freight, but there's also Running on Ice, the newsletter that could not be colder. You can subscribe to that on freightwaves.com/runningonice. Today, we are getting a little crazy with things, and we are bringing back the doc, Dr. Bob. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
I am excited. Usually we have Dr. Cliff with us as well. But you know, today just one doctor is all we need. It's all we need in the house. All right. So today we were going to kind of get into the sustainable packaging side of things. And over there, I feel like there's very few things that you guys don't take care of over there at Thermal Custom Packaging. But I am excited to dive into it. So what are some of these kind of current challenges in the cold chain industry regarding sustainable packaging and kind of the transportation that happens with it?
The bulk of the issue, and we've talked about this indirectly multiple times in the past, are that the current products that are out there are one-time use products, not recyclable. A whole host of, as an example, in the forget the vehicle that's carrying the food, or you know, but the cooling part of it. A myriad of different kinds of plastics in the gel packs that, you know, that are currently being used when dry ice is not being used. And the solutions in those gel packs are also toxic to the environment. And so they are a one-time use for everything, including the containers that they're being shipped in, that the products are being shipped in. And so there's nothing sustainable about what's going on right now in a non-closed loop system. It just comes and goes and then gets dumped somewhere. And of course, that's part of the problem about the sustainability, let alone the carbon footprint stuff, but just the toxicity of all the garbage that comes out is only used one time.
If you're not, like you said, if you're not in a closed loop system, obviously things get a lot more difficult because there's not really a way to come pick it back up and put it back in the system. So I guess when you have something, because I've even seen stuff come out now that there's specific packaging for like refrigerated pet food, not necessarily just like human meal kits or human delivery things. Like they're even expanding out into the pet food world, which I didn't know that refrigerated delivered to your door pet food was a thing until I read about it the other day. But I guess when you're not in the closed loop system, kind of how do you even begin to start approaching some of these or having more sustainable packaging, especially from a cost perspective? Because a lot of that stuff is more expensive versus like the gel pack things, but they are better for the environment. So kind of how do you weigh that, that like extra cost versus, you know, having not toxic products?
I think, you know, the people that are buying things, for the most part, don't pay attention to that. You know, they just want whatever they want or whatever they need to get shipped to be done. And they really don't spend a whole lot of time thinking about the issues related to toxicity of products, carbon footprint, recycling of stuff. I'm sure a lot of them end up dumping those products in the recycle bins, but the problem is they're not recyclable, which creates another problem on the recycling end of how do you separate that stuff out. In particular, like the gel packs, the soft gel pack plastics are not recyclable. And so it just creates all kinds of havoc. But again, I guess you order what you want, you get what you want, you toss it out and don't even think about it, which is not really a good position to be in.
That brings up the whole wish cycling thing of things where, oh, I can't recycle it, but I'm just going to put it in the recycling bin because I feel like I should be able to recycle it, which actually is one of the main contaminants for recycling. But that's a different story for a different day. We're not getting into that today. So I guess when it comes to kind of, if I'm a shipper and I, you know, for the most part, my consumers don't super care about how things get to them. They just want these goods shipped to them while it's cold or in whatever state it's supposed to get there. If I'm a shipper, how do I reduce this carbon footprint and reduce the potentially like toxic packaging or stuff like that? How do I reduce that while still making sure that my products get to my consumers in the condition that they expect?
Well, I mean, it's very easy to do, but it's not economical in the beginning because anything that's sustainable is going to be more sustainable and in a closed loop system is going to be more costly in the beginning. But if you look at the, you know, run it out, you know, 5, 10, 15 years, it's a lot less money for the purveyor of the goods, you know, to set up a system, you know, system like that. But, you know, you just have to have the wherewithal to decide, you know, this is what I'm going to do. The carbon footprint thing is, you know, I mean, that's the buzzwords now, but it's a pain in the ass to do. And it's very hard for a mom and pop shop, you know, to go through all the gyrations, hire the people to do, you know, to track all the records and, you know, come up with a number for their carbon footprint for last year to go forward next, you know, next year. And it's going to be a very difficult situation. The frozen or cold food delivery system is growing like 10+% a year, and it's expected to be almost 60 billion at the end of 24. So it is a big business, but there's a lot of small players in it. The big players, not necessarily with food stuff, were the healthcare people that started looking at this years and years ago, which were some of our original clients, who their issue was the cost of dry ice and the maintenance of the dry ice and the sublimation and loss, you know, as it's being stored, waiting to get used, along with obviously the other issues, you know, the burn and explosions and, you know, increased transport costs, particularly air transport costs. But they came to the realization, a number of huge hospital systems across the country came to us years ago and decided, all right, we're going to take the hit and we're going to do this. And their volumes, one of our clients ships 300,000 medical specimens a day, using our totes and our PCMs. Some cold, some -7, some -16, some -21 centigrade. And it's all in a closed loop system. And they figured out that over the long haul, this was going to be cheaper for them, easier on their staff from a standpoint of not having all this toxicity stuff. And what we did with our totes is they all can be labeled for this hospital system. It's got probably 100 chains within it. So each one's got their own labeled tote. And so they know where they go and they know where they come back and they keep extra PCMs and they just keep flipping these things on a daily basis. And the arrangement that we had with them, is if something wears out, it's not the PCMs because they're the HDP, you know, hard shell stuff and there's nothing toxic. It's just a specialized salt water solution that keeps it cold. But for less than half of the cost on a new one, 15 years later, they send them back to us and we rebuild them and send them back to them. You know, with brand new covers and whatever needs to be fixed. So over the long haul, it was a significant cost savings, you know, for them. Now that's a huge, you know, business. The grocery business is getting there, but they really haven't gotten, they haven't figured out personally, you know, the negative of dry ice and the problems with dry ice, and nor have they really looked, from my mind, you know, at a closed loop system, which would cost them less money over the, you know, over the long haul. So I think it'll happen, but I can't, you know, obviously we'd like it to happen sooner, but it's, you know, but it will happen because it's just not economically and not sustainable, to keep doing it the way they're doing it.
Yeah, I feel like at some point in time, something has to give. But I think, honestly, any move that you can make towards that closed loop system, it's just got to be so much easier for everything that you work on, whether that's, you know, kind of building that efficiency into your network or making, like you said, trying to even begin to capture some of the carbon emission stuff. Because like you said, it's going to be difficult for those that are small, those smaller businesses, because they don't have millions of dollars to throw at the problem, or they don't have the ability to just go hire a team of 10 people that can sit there and track a bunch of stuff all the time. So they have that limited resource of, okay, well, I'm a smaller operation. I can maybe afford to hire one person because I have to, but this one person's going to have to do a whole bunch of other stuff because that's just the nature of doing business in a smaller organization, is everybody wears a bunch of different hats.
Right. It's interesting since you're talking about it. I have a bunch of Ring cameras down here, and you know, every once in a while they go, and you can get a protection plan for all of them for $100 a year. And I just had one go and called them up. They sent me a new camera in a not old style box, you know, newer, you know, heavier box, and just said, you know, put the old one back in it. We recycle them. You know, here's the shipping label. So even companies like that are now starting to do closed loop. Obviously there's nothing frozen or cold or anything there, but it could be. And so if the container's reusable and there's an easy solution for UPS drop off or FedEx pickup or something, there's really not a lot of things that have to happen from the end user standpoint if you set it up, you know, set it up from the beginning the right way.
That's even something that, you know, because half the battle, especially in the frozen food delivery, is, you know, you have to get your consumers, you have to kind of teach your consumers what to do, what you want them to do. But if other industries are adapting it, because there's, like you said, the Ring cameras, there's been a whole bunch of stuff that I've just been able to take the damaged thing, put it back in the box, like literally the exact box they send it in. I take out the new product, put the old one in, send it. We're all good. And I think that especially if you were to get a HelloFresh or a Green Chef or whatever, you get the box that you get it in, I think there's absolutely a way to kind of opt into a program where if they're already coming and making deliveries once a week to that area or to your house, that you just kind of have a reusable tote that you can do something like that. I think there are opportunities. It's just going to be a little bit more creative, and it's going to take someone who has that kind of money and the ability to say, okay, well, we're not going to make money on this right now, but in the future, it's going to save us more down the line. And I think it's just kind of that creative, you have to have that creativity up front and kind of teach your consumers that, like, this is what we want you to do. And it's not that difficult.
Well, if you think about it, you know, this food delivery system is brand new. You know, this is COVID, just from a couple years ago. Because nobody could go out to grocery shop. And so it evolved very quickly into the system that it is right now, but it's just not mature enough to do what we're talking about. I'm sure it will. I'm sure everybody will. As soon as one of the big players, whether they're grocery, you know, or Myers or, big chain starts doing it with a closed loop system, everybody will be doing it because it's a better way to go, you know, from a standpoint of ecology and sustainability and, you know, safety and everything else.
Yeah, I am. I'm excited to see kind of what you said, because like you said, it's new. We all have to figure out what it looks like and what it looks like now that, you know, we have that normalcy. We have to just kind of figure out what that looks like. But because also the last thing we need is a bunch of dry ice hanging out in people's houses.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they wouldn't, you know, if you just leave it out, it's going to be gone in 24 hours, you know, the sublimation piece of it. So you're left with the box, and or the gel packs or whatever, you know, whatever else, which just goes into the, goes into the trash. But the system will evolve, you know, it may end up occurring because of some legislative activities, you know, as time goes by, just because of the, you know, the too much trash, too much toxic stuff, you know, floating around. It would be nicer if the companies don't wait till they do something like that and are forced into it, because the regs can sometimes create more problems than if the companies just figured out how to do it themselves and made, you know, and made it work. So I'm sure it's going to happen. I just obviously don't know when.
Do you see any kind of regulations even like on the horizon for something like this? Or do you think it's still too kind of new for, or I don't know if new is the right word, but still kind of like a, basically, like, do you see any kind of regulations potentially coming down the pipe for how these meal kits or frozen food delivery is gonna happen, versus, or is it just still kind of like a wild, wild west and everybody's just kind of making it up as they go along?
I think it's probably the latter rather than the former, but I, you know, the logical thing, at least from my perspective, that would happen would be the rules and regs as far as toxicity and recycling stuff. And they'll, you know, they'll start forcing the issue even tighter. You know, you have to prove that this stuff is okay to go in the recycling bin. And then if it isn't, it just goes into the trash, but then it's, the plastics, you know, will be dead and buried times 100 over, you know, and they're still going to be floating around. All the news, and I don't think I've sent you anything, but the they're called microplastics, you know, the little pieces that are in the water bottles and everything else. There's all kinds of medical literature that's coming out now about the toxicity of that stuff. So I'm sure the legislative end is more than likely going to be because of the negatives of recycling or stuff that shouldn't be going in recycling and the right kind of plastics at the right time, you know, that are reusable and no toxic chemicals going in. So that's probably what the first thing that's going to happen. And if that happens, I would suspect the companies are going to open their eyes a little bit further. Like, you know, we got to get a better mousetrap here.
Yeah, this kind of, you kind of need the one, you, for lack of a better analogy, you need the one smoke signal to signal everyone else that, okay, we should probably circle the wagons and do something about this. I guess when it comes to, so if I am a grocer, a shipper, or a pharmaceutical shipper or something, what is that one piece of advice that you have for some company that might be looking to improve some sustainability of their temperature controlled deliveries? Or what is kind of that one thing that you're like, okay, this is something that you need to kind of focus on or start to care about?
Well, I think it depends on what you're shipping. The frozen food industry that ships only uses dry ice, and because that's all there is out there other than what we have in our product. There's been all kinds of press, you know, related to the CO2 emissions and the cost of the dry ice and the toxicity of the dry ice and loss of the storage while you're trying to store it to ship, and the costing right now, I think, is somewhere between $1 and $3 a pound, you know, for dry ice, depending on where you're getting it and how much you're getting it. But even whatever price, if you buy 100 pounds and you're storing it to having a supply on hand all the time to be able to keep on moving product, you know, 50% of it's going to be gone in 48 hours, you know, even in a freezer. And so, I'm sure they're going to start looking at the economics of using that particular product. The moms and pops that are using the gel packs, You know, it's cheap, they're easy, you know, and it's a good solution. But I think the regulations are going to eventually catch up to that piece because, yes, the CO2 from the dry ice goes into the atmosphere along with everything else. But the other stuff just stays with us for, you know, forever. Because very little of it, probably less than 10% of the soft packs, are recyclable. And so I think that's the rules and regs will come down on them. And that makes, I think that's probably what's going to force some of the issues. One, economically for the big players. And then two, the toxicity issue for the smaller players.
Do you think they'll ever develop one of those? This is just the thought that popped into my head. Do you think they'll ever kind of come up with a good solution for those like gel packs, like a good replacement solution for it? That, like, I know that you guys have that your inside your face changes are like basically a concentrated type of saltwater thing, majigger. That's not the right term to use, but you guys have, it's basically like if it punctures, someone eats it, nobody's gonna get sick. But do you think there's
salt water? That's all it is.
Yeah.
Well, we actually looked at that way back when, doing that. The problem is they don't last. They're easily punctured. This is before all the BS about the toxicity of the plastics and that they never go away. They're not reusable multiple times. I mean, you get one, you stick it in your freezer, the gel pack. All right, I'm going to go camping, or I got a little cooler and I'm, go put some pop or beer in it, and then go out. But you use it a couple of times and it rips, and it's not good for long-term usage. It's inherent in the making of a soft pack. I'll call it like a Ziploc, but pack that fits the stuff in it. It's not meant to be durable. And because of the plastics that go in there, they're not recyclable. And so it's really just a one or two time use thing. And until somebody gets over the hump and decides, one, look at the big echo picture of what's going on here. And then two, the long-term cost picture, that they come to the realization that something that's more durable, like our HDPE hard gel packs, that we have them out, they've been out 15 years. They don't.
A gel pack could never.
No, it would. Again, 300,000 specimens a day. They're shipping. The only problem with those is honestly, you'll laugh, they get stolen. Because somebody on some end in the these medical industry stuff, this is great, XXX, and they'll take them home and then they'll use them at home the same, the same way, because they don't ever leak and they don't ever, fall apart. And just depending on what salt solution is in there and what freezer capabilities you have, in your home freezer, you could do the zero or you could do the -7, which is basically a, refrigerator freezer. But anything colder than that, you need an ultra cold freezer. But they don't go away unless somebody picks them up and takes them.
That's an unfortunate side effect of your product is, they last so long that the only time you have to replace them is when they get stolen.
Yeah, that was, jokingly, we need to downgrade these things, because, they don't ever go away. They don't break. But the clients like it. And the same way with the totes that we have, they're fairly expensive, brand new. But 15 years later, you just send them back and we recover them and redo the insulation and give you your new cup, labels on the covers. And then you're good for another 15.
It's honestly, it's a good system. I like it. All right. We are running out of time, and we've heard some dad, we've heard some nice dad jokes or granddad jokes. So, today we're looking for, if you could have any superpower, but it only worked on Wednesdays, what superpower would you choose?
Well, we talked earlier, but I'm a doc, you know, retired surgeon, urologist, adult and pediatric urologist. And although I never golf, but docs always took Wednesday off to golf. And I never took Wednesday off because most people didn't think the doctor was in. So it was a lighter day. And, you know, and my old time patients would come in and I could spend a little bit more time with them. But if I had my druthers, my superpower would be take Wednesday off and I would go boating and fishing.
I like it. I like it. The basically your version of golfing.
Yes, that's right.
That actually seems like a really cool superpower. I like that. It's a good one. So if anyone has additional superpowers for you to consider, or if they have any questions about, you know, the future of sustainability in frozen food delivery, where can they find you outside the show?
Through my email, which you have. It's rdloretto@thermalcustompackaging.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Okay. Thank you.
You can catch other episodes of Running on Ice right here on FreightWaves TV, YouTube, or anywhere else you get your podcasts like Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Need more Running on Ice news? No sweat. Subscribe to the newsletter on FreightWaves.com/runningonice. See you on the internet.